So like we announced in the little introduction to our show, this week we are looking at basically a week in US foreign policy. It was a busy week in that respect. Donald Trump, US president, began his foreign politics week by imposing new sanctions on Iran. The two nations are, if for people who don't know, in the midst of an ongoing crisis following Trump's decision to revoke the deal on Iran's nuclear power that his predecessor Barack Obama had reached at the end of his mandate. And since that, Donald Trump has reinstated the economic sanctions against Iran. And as the crisis deepens, the sanctions increase. So on Monday last week, the US president signed an executive order targeting Iranian leaders, and especially the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who is the supreme leader of Iran, in his office. So these sanctions aim to deprive the Ayatollah of key financial resources. And this seems actually more of a symbolic measure, as it is actually rather unlikely that Iran's supreme leader and those around him actually hold any substantial assets in international banks. But for months now, the United States has been pressuring Iran with economic sanctions, mainly focusing on its oil exports, because oil exportations make up most of the country's resources. According to an article from Business Insider, Iran is losing $120 million per day because of the ban on oil exportations, and that is causing inflation to rise to 50%. So those sanctions seem to be fairly effective. And so the new measures that came in last Monday were probably prompted by recent declarations by Iran saying that it is amassing more nuclear fuel, which contravenes the deal they made.
The 2015 deal?
Yeah, yep. 2015 indeed. And so they were meant to kind of just stop amassing more nuclear fuel, which they have done again, according to them. And there's also the case of the attacks on oil tankers and a US drone that happened near Oman, and I think that was maybe last month, and it is believed to have been perpetrated by Iran. There's no proof, but the US definitely believes that Iran is behind those attacks. So Trump's goal is to put Iran in a very unfavorable position to renegotiate a nuclear deal. I think he aims to renegotiate the deal, but he wants to make sure that Iran doesn't have a lot of leverage, so that would put the United States in a better position. Both him and his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, have said that they're open for talks without any preconditions, but their next move, if they do do that move, would indicate otherwise. They said that in a few days, Iran's Foreign Minister, Javad Zarif, would also face sanctions. And Zarif is the person that negotiated the 2015 nuclear deal with the US, and he has since been pretty much in charge of the Iranian diplomacy. And so he would likely be the one that would partake any new negotiations. But obviously, if you sanction him, he's less than likely to be partaking those negotiations. So that's kind of, we don't really know what's going to happen there. We'll see if they go through with those sanctions.
Yeah, indeed. I just want to add, it's quite interesting because Zarif has come out and said that Iran hasn't breached the deal, and that there's a clause within paragraph 36 of the deal, which kind of means that if any other of the kind of member states of the deal aren't fulfilling their kind of role as a member state of the agreement, then the resolution kind of dissolves or changes a bit, which is kind of an interesting thing, because then perhaps he doesn't see the need to renegotiate it, so the sanctions against him perhaps may not actually be particularly effective. But that's another side thing to think about again.
Well, this deal is kind of all up in the air. It seems like it's kind of standing, but also not entirely standing. Yeah. So there's probably lots of loopholes that can be jumped into.
Yes.
But what it shows, though, those new sanctions and just this, the sanctions in general against Iran, is that this is currently the US preferred method of using leverage against nations, and that is economic warfare. And it is very visible that this is what they want to do. In another example, which is how they deal with China. So there was a G20 meeting summit in Japan. So that is the 20 biggest powers in the world.
Yeah. Global 20?
Yes. Meeting every so often.
Yeah. As they do.
So that happened this week. And China and the United States have reached a truce this week. It's a little bit complicated to summarize it in a few minutes, but basically the US and China have been at kind of war, symbolically speaking, in terms of trade. They've tried to reach a trade agreement, which has not been the case so far. What the US wants is a reform of China's global business practices and the end of the subsidies that are given to domestic companies, so Chinese companies, by China's government at the expense of American businesses. So obviously China won't abide to those conditions, and it sees its own state-owned businesses and the industrial subsidies that they give as a way to uplift their economy and obviously feed their people and help their people. So there's a bit of a status quo there. And so that prompted actually a reaction from the United States. They decided to spike tariffs on the importation of Chinese manufactured goods.
Yet again.
So tariffs are taxes that you pay on importation and exportation. And so these Chinese manufactured good reached a high of, so it was, I think, $200 billion worth of goods that were taxed at a rate of 25%, which is extremely high. And so that happened after negotiations sort of failed in March last year. And American companies also banned last month. Oh, yeah, so the United States also banned its American companies from selling their technology to Huawei, which is China's pretty much biggest telecommunications company, because it was deemed a potential threat to national security. And the United States has been very careful with Huawei and kind of going to war with that as well. And so China's reaction to that has been to also increase its tariffs on US imported goods. But we're talking $60 billion dollars worth of goods, also taxed at a 25% rate, as opposed to $200 billion. But still a lot of money and a lot of taxes. And so that has obviously resulted in global economic instability, but it also has resulted in the decision for certain companies to move their assembly lines out of China, like so the final part, so that their goods are not actually made in China, and so when imported, they don't come from China. And it's also resulted in a struggle for US farmers, because most of the goods that were subjected to a spike in tariffs rates on China's side are actually agricultural goods that are produced by US farmers.
So it's kind of not necessarily backfired in all regards, but it doesn't seem to be benefiting many people on either side of the trade war.
Not really. So this the talk that happened between Donald Trump and Xi Jinping that resulted in that truce, basically just keep the status quo as it is. The tariffs are going to carry on being at the same rate. The only thing that changed is that the United States has reauthorized its tech companies to trade with Huawei. And so at least for technology that doesn't threaten national security. So it seems like more of a win for China in that respect. But as Trump seems to sort of be backtracking a little bit, that could be because of his domestic electoral agenda. So the presidential election are coming in 2020, which is coming up soon, I guess. It's about a year and a bit away, a year and a half away.
Soon enough.
And so Trump is trying to preserve his electoral base, and farmers make up a lot of his electoral base. So he's been quite cautious.
He's needing to cover his own interests now.
Exactly, which he also seemed to be doing when he went to North Korea. That was actually
another journey.
I guess it's a big deal.
Yes.
It's definitely been deemed a historical moment. It's the first time that a sitting president actually steps foot into North Korea.
From South Korea.
Exactly.
The demilitarized zone, even.
So that made for really good photographs. Definitely a big, communications campaign, I think, for both leaders, Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. And it's funny how it started, because it all started with a tweet, as per usual, I think, with Donald Trump.
Yes.
Basically just saying that he was going to go to South Korea, and that, you know, maybe if Kim Jong-un wanted to meet with him, then, you know, they could
have a chat. Yeah.
Could say hello, as he said. And that actually happened really quickly afterwards. It was organized kind of last minute.
Diplomacy 101.
Exactly. And so that was, again, really great for photographs. They also had a meeting that lasted about an hour afterwards, so it wasn't just for photos. And so what happened during that meeting is that they mainly talked about their blossoming friendship rather than really the, you know, the core of the issue, which is the denuclearization of North Korea, which is something that's quite important for the United States.
Yes.
In February this year, they met Trump and Kim at a summit in Vietnam, and they failed to reach an agreement. And since then, it had kind of been a bit off between the two leaders, and there were kind of like firing of trial missiles on both sides. So everyone thought that, oh, you know, that didn't work and it's not going to work anymore. But then for some reason, a North Korean news agency made a profile, like a really scathing profile about Joe Biden, the former vice president, that Trump really liked. And then they started sending each other letters, Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, which sounds, when you say it like
friendship
that, it sounds...
friendship restored.
I know, it sounds really
how
surreal. But yeah, apparently Kim Jong-un's letter to Donald Trump was beautiful. So they became friends again, or on their way to.
It does seem to be a common theme between meetings between North Korea and America, that it's kind of just a picnic and then, like, nothing ever seems to actually emerge from it, apart from photos.
Yeah, mainly photographs. So, like I said, they didn't really talk about denuclearization of North Korea. They sort of agreed that there would be new negotiations and talks resuming soon. No agenda being set, though. Nothing really discussed. So it's kind of all up in the air. Some people might argue that this is more than any other American president has achieved in the past 70 years.
Well,
I guess face-to-face meetings and shaking hands and having discussions, that's the positive point.
Speaking of other talks that happened this week, we will wrap up very rapidly, sadly, with a discussion about another thing that the American administration delved into this week.
Yeah, and that was the tough topic of the Israel-Palestine peace plan. So Donald Trump had his senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, draft and present a version of that peace plan, and it was called The Opportunity of the Century by Kushner. And it's already been rejected by the Palestinian Authority, even before the plan conference and workshop that will be held in Bahrain today and tomorrow, where Kushner will actually try and get the Gulf Arab countries to pinch in to his plan. So what's the proposal? Well, it's definitely not that two-state solution that the Palestinian Authority would like to see. It's more through an economic plan, so it offers to set up a $50 billion international fund that would boost the Palestinian economy. And so at least half of this money would be given to Gaza and the West Bank for infrastructure and helping with the economy. They say they hope to create 1 million jobs and double the GDP, and the remaining $25 billion would be allocated to increasing trade, exports, and foreign direct investment in Egypt, Jordan, and Lebanon. And so it seems that the United States is hoping that these Gulf Arab countries will be the main people to put money into that fund. They haven't said anything about the United States hasn't said anything about them putting money in there directly. They might not, because they cut all of the funding that they were giving to the Palestinian Authority. So rather unsurprisingly, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas said on Sunday that he would not subscribe to this plan. He said that they do need the money and the assistance, but what they need foremost is a political solution, which the American plan fails to address. And so a lot of the critics of this plan say that the current situation it's the current situation that is responsible for Palestine's economy being so so much in difficulty. And so that is mainly because of the occupation of Palestinian land by Israel. And that is substantiated by a 2016 World Bank report. So it's not just people who want to see a Palestinian state. But what's interesting as well is that critics also comes on not necessarily just the left-leaning side of America. There's also been people that have worked for the US administrations, especially under George W. Bush, that say that this is really showing a lack of understanding of how this region works and what people want. And I'll stop there, but there is more to be said about this.